Hi, guys. We want to thank our great sponsor, Legion M. They are the first fan-owned entertainment company. We love working with them. They create really incredible experiences for people. If you're someone who wants to feel like you own a piece and are a piece of the industry, it's a great way to do it. They do meetups all over the country. They have a really cool community going online. I cannot recommend them enough. Go to legionm.com for more information.
Hi, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
You're listening to Maltin on Movies, and we are listening today to someone we admire very much, Alan Tudyk. Hello. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you very much. Thank you.
We've been fans of yours, mm-hmm. as you may know, for a long, long time.
We stalk you regularly.
That's you.
Yeah.
In the car that's just idling in front of my house.
It's our way of saying hello.
Those are very effective tinted windows.
Thank you.
And we have an odd sort of asterisk in our respective resumes.
Yes.
Which is that I hosted a show which was seen by dozens of people on Reels Channel called Secrets Out.
Yes.
And we had a good time making that show. And the people who did see it liked it.
Oh, I liked it a bunch.
And
the other guy.
Our wonderful producer, Christine Shaw, is a longtime friend and colleague. And I took a vacation week.
Yep.
Imagine the temerity to take a vacation week. And they didn't want to show a rerun or cancel the show. So they wanted to find a substitute host.
And yes. You look so much alike.
Yes.
That they said, that guy.
I think it was because we had just featured Death at a Funeral on the show.
Yes.
They said, well, what about Alan Tudyk? He's so funny in that movie. And let's see if he's around and available. And you did.
I loved it.
Good.
I had a blast. And they were also very nice. There was a, I don't know if you remember, I rewrote some of my intros to mm-hmm. movies and things. Oh, all of the stuff that I said about where you were, that we were roommates. I had an idea that we were roommates, my roommate, that he's not here. Yeah. And they were all, yeah, go for it. That's
yeah,
fine.
Yeah, yeah.
And
great.
Nathan Fillion came on. I've shown that to a lot of people. Nathan Fillion came on and we did an interview about mm-hmm. Slither.
Huh.
From the director James Gunn, who hadn't done much at that point in time.
Oh, nice boy.
Yeah.
Nice boy, that
I hope things go well for him. Yeah, I had a blast. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a fun show to do because we highlight it's one thing that's kind of a running theme in my career is spotlighting movies that didn't get the attention they deserve.
Right.
And we built a whole film festival about it.
Yeah.
About a month ago. But that was
Maltin Fest.
That was the basis of that
nice.
Show.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so glad you were able to do that.
Yeah, thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Good.
The other part is I think that we single-handedly have shown everyone we've ever met times 12 Tucker and Dale.
Oh, yeah.
There you
go. That's one that could make the...
Eli Craig, the writer and director of Tucker and Dale versus Evil. Write this down, folks, if you haven't seen
it. It's on Netflix. It's wonderful.
Tucker and Dale versus Evil. And you will thank us. You will jump up and down with joy, and then you will thank us for telling you about this movie if you don't know it.
We saw it at Sundance and met Eli, who was wonderful, and we said, would you show this? My dad teaches at USC. He said, would you, you know, show it in class? Yes, we would. A year later, it still hadn't been sold. And we thought, well, we'll just show it again. So Eli came again. It's the only movie we've ever done that with.
I've only shown one movie twice, and
that's
it.
Came
really?
Back again,
yeah.
And Eli brought, you know, Eli's wonderful, yeah. And he's
and
so interesting.
But it just, it killed both times.
Yeah.
And
I see what you did there.
Hey.
No pun intended.
No pun intended.
But it really did. It brought the house down. And it's such a terrific movie. And you and Tyler Labine are so good
funny,
in it.
God.
Yeah, he and I had a blast. He and I were, I think we had 2 weeks to become best friends. Or not even. I think it was maybe a week. Showed up and was like, okay, so we're going to be best friends. And by the end of the night, we're like, all right, this is going to be great. Like, he's the easiest person to get along with, and we had a lot of fun together making it.
And so if you don't know the movie, it's a kind of a parody of a Friday the 13th type film where a group of young people mm-hmm. they're getting together to go up to the country to a cabin in the woods for
a
weekend.
Yeah.
And they stop on the way to a roadside place to buy some beer. And at this roadside place, they get a glimpse of these two guys, one in bib overalls, mm-hmm. and I forget how you were dressed, and who looked to them a little strange, maybe a little eerie. And because it's a teenagers going to a cabin in the woods movie, they become certain that you are creepy, possible murderous.
Yeah, killer hillbillies.
People. Yeah, killer hillbillies. Killbillies, exactly.
Killbillies, there we go. Yeah.
And there's and, a, there's and a, they couldn't be more wrong.
No, but it's...
They're just a couple good old boys.
Just two guys who...
just trying to fix up their vacation home.
Weekend
home.
That's all
they're doing.
Just want to go fishing.
Yep.
What's wrong with that?
And you two guys are very taken with them, and your friend, played by Tyler, is smitten with one of the young ladies.
Yes, and we save her life. She falls, and we save her in a pond. Mm-hmm. And when we're fishing, we save her, and we're saying, "Hey, we got your friend." Or they hear,
"We got your friend." Yeah,
anyway, they hear it. The
misunderstandings build, and not to give anything more away. One misunderstanding leads to another, and it becomes violent.
There's a lot of death.
Hilarious death.
That's the twist. Yeah, yeah. So it actually is a gruesome Friday the 13th part movie, but hilarious.
Yes.
There's our plug.
And it's a tough tightrope to walk.
If you remember the story that he told us was that you were hired, you came in to audition, whoever it was that was supposed to play the part.
Yes. Fell out.
Exactly.
Thank you.
I hate
Sir
that
Ralph
guy.
Richardson.
I don't even know that guy. I hate that guy. And he said, you came to the audition with your suitcase packed because they sent you to Canada either that evening or the next morning to film.
Yeah. It was fast. I got the script and it was fun. I read it. As I was reading it, I was like, there's no way they're going to be able to keep all these balls in the air. You're like, because it is. It's misunderstandings.
Yes.
Like, no. At this point, a cop would come. And then a cop shows up. Yeah. Oh, well, wait, let's keep going. Well, then they would get, they got away out of that. Like, he just kept wriggling out of it. And it, it was, we shot that thing in 3 weeks. It was
hard.
It was an unfortunate, it went to Sundance. It did really well. But it was right, it coincided with the collapse of the economy and the DVD sales and all of this stuff. And so all these people said, we don't buy those kinds of movies now.
The other thing that happened that Eli told us was that it was illegally downloaded many thousands of times when people were doing that.
Right.
Which they shouldn't do. And it was downloaded so many times illegally that one potential distributor said, we can't make any money on it now. Uh-huh. Which is a sad and sorry fate for such a good movie. But all right.
At least it has a home at Netflix now.
That's right.
And you can see it.
Yes.
And I love showing it to friends because it's wonderful.
It's a good all year round.
That's right.
That's right.
Chuckle fest.
It's never a bad time.
No.
To enjoy that movie.
Unless you've had a friend who's recently been killed in the woods. probably.
Caveat emptor. Yes.
Who of us hasn't accidentally fallen into a wood chipper?
You know,
I ask
that,
you.
These things happen.
You know?
Yeah. So, Alan, a couple of basics we want to get to. You are from the great state of Texas.
Yes, I am.
But you don't sound like you're from the great state of Texas.
No.
And never have.
No, I did evidently.
You knew him as a child? What is this?
Never have in our acquaintance.
No, I did in my, when I was younger, I went to drama school in New York City and mm-hmm. people would say, well, after a couple of beers, they'd say, wait a second, where are you from? Because I'd start to get a little lazy with the way I talk. And if I ever get on the phone with my cousin Michael, it goes back pretty quick. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that that's even my accent that I'm going back to, or I'm just mm-hmm. adopting his for our conversation. Mm-hmm. Drama school took it away.
Yeah.
They ferreted out all of the...
That was that place, what's that called? Oh, yeah, Juilliard.
Juilliard.
Yeah.
Yes.
That drama school.
Nice school.
Yeah. Right. It's a good school. Right. It's very nice. It's right there in Lincoln Center.
Yeah.
Your campus is Lincoln Center.
Yeah.
But there was the park was right there.
Sure.
So we had a lot of fun.
El Paso to Lincoln Center.
Right. Yeah.
Very similar places.
It was wild. I'm really lucky to have found Juilliard because it really changed my trajectory. And I was in Dallas acting and wasn't, I honestly thought as an actor I was going to work as an actor in Dallas until some point some producer was going to come along and go, Alan, you're needed in New York City, or Alan, you're needed in Los Angeles. And I was just going to leave it up to that producer, whoever it might be, mm-hmm. to pull me in whichever direction fate had deemed necessary. And I was in Dallas for a couple of years, and I realized I was in an improv troupe. I did a couple of plays and realized, oh, this is really hard in Dallas. I can spend my life achieving, climbing up the ladder in Dallas, or I can go back to school, learn a little bit more, and climb that similar ladder, but in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
I was bartending. I could bartend anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody said Juilliard was a good school. So I it's the only one I auditioned for. I didn't know anything about it, and I luckily got in.
Wow.
Yeah.
And did you start getting jobs while you were in school or after?
I did. Juilliard's hard. Drama school is hard. Yeah. Any drama school you go to is hard. Any school you go to is hard. But then you get into drama, and it's all about feeling and arts, and you get all these people. Many of them don't become actors, even at Juilliard, because there's a lot of actors are nuts. So you've got the most intense nuts together in a pressure cooker. And I left my third year because I was cooked. I was cooked by year three. And so at year two, I went to New York Stage and Film as a summer program in Poughkeepsie. And all of these new playwrights were there. All of these directors were there that work in the theater scene. And I did one read-through with David Strathairn. I did a workshop with David Strathairn. I played his son. And it was like this, wow. And then they said, you know what, Alan, stick around. Would you, we have another workshop we need somebody for. And it was Bunny Bunny that Alan's Y. Bell wrote. He was a writer for SNL in the first year, and it was about his relationship with Gilda Radner. And so I played, it was a play about Gilda Radner and Alan's Y. Bell, and then every other person within the play, I played. And they said, okay, stick around a little bit longer. We have a play somebody just fell out of. We need you to come in. So I spent my entire summer up there and met so many people that when I went back to school at Juilliard, I had enough contacts in the real world. Nikki Silver got me an agent, the playwright Nikki Silver. I knew a director he was working with, and he said, oh, I met this kid up in the summer. You should see him for your play. I auditioned. I got home. I'd gone to a jazz festival park. Ah, anyway, I got home. There was a message from Nikki Silver. Alan! Where are you? You just left. I mean, where are you? You should be home. This is Nikki Silver. You're amazing. Oh, my God. Where have you been? I'm not casting you. I should say that. You're not getting the part. You're wrong. Oh. It's like, but I called two agents. I hope that's okay. And told them your name. And they're probably going to call you and want to sign you. So I hope that's all right. And so then I got an agent. From that, so within my third year of school, I got an agent, and Bunny Bunny ended up the second play that I did, ended up having an off-Broadway run, and I did it, and because it was such a flashy role, because I played 20-something roles within it, it was a lot of changing clothes, running on stage as Gilda's friend, who's very upset and just lost her boyfriend, and then run off stage, and I come back on, he's some guy who lost his thumb in a lathe accident, but you know, he really likes Alan's Y. Bell, and did all these different roles that it got me a toehold within the theater community, and I got off-Broadway role to an off-Broadway role to a little role in Patch Adams to another little role in another movie, and just kind of inched my way up to this podcast right here. I've inched myself back
You've
into your life and into your life.
The pinnacle of your career.
Yes.
The accents.
Oh, yes.
No, they are glorious. I mean,
oh. But the thing is that you almost, at least from our acquaintance with your professional career,
uh-huh.
almost immediately you were a character guy.
Right.
But who could do voices in a very convincing way? We always ask each other what's the first thing you remember. My dad immediately went to Death at a Funeral, but for me, uh-huh. I said, "Gosh, I think the first things I saw were 28 28 Days.
Yes, of course.
And which people often confuse with 28 Days Later, which is much funnier.
I wish.
Because the idea of being at a rehab with zombies cracks me up.
I'd like to be the character in the rehab I played as a zombie, because he was Gerhard Weinocht, he was fabulous.
But that's it.
But if he was crazy to be Raoul, who want brains, possibly to eat something snack, not large, but something to tide me over at least. That would have been, that's a good zombie film.
Into Night's Tale, which was also not zombies.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But this is what I'm saying. This is what you do so well.
It's weird. That was, since the Bunny Bunny was the play, that's kind of, it's really how I started doing the thing I've continued to do.
Mm-hmm. With the voices.
With the, yeah. These
making with the voices.
Making with the voices and these people. All of the different
ones. Of course, but it's not just voices, of course.
Yeah, no, you're also a really good actor. That helps.
No. As voice people who almost exclusively do voices, say for cartoons, mm-hmm. Disabused me of that notion years ago and said, no, they're actors.
Right.
They're actors who play characters using their voices,
right.
Which is very, very different from just doing a funny voice.
Right. Right.
And so that's what you bring to the table.
Thank you. Yeah, people will ask me, because I do a lot of now voices, like actual voiceover work, like how to get into that.
Yeah.
And
go to Juilliard.
Yeah, first you got to spend a couple of years in Dallas thinking you're going to get pulled out of Dallas by some magical producer.
Yep.
Then go to Poughkeepsie. And
then Poughkeepsie. The summer. Yes, yes. Try to get into Alan Zweibel's Bunny Bunny. I tell them, you need to just be an actor.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know any voiceover actor who isn't an actor.
Yeah.
They started as an actor and they have that talent. Their voice can do a lot of different things, and one way or another they get a shot. But it's acting and theater a lot of the times also. That theater is a place where you find a lot of voiceover actors as well.
Because
you need the instrument.
And you need the instrument and the technique.
Right.
Which you can call upon, you can summon that up, which somebody who just was the class clown who could do an imitation of Elmer Fudd can't do. And it's...
he does a great Elmer Fudd, I'll tell you.
I feel like it's coming.
This is his later, after
the mics are off. Oh.
Elmer Fudd and Droopy nails him.
Oh, Droopy.
Nails him.
Yes.
But...
So moving right along.
Yes.
So
that was not just a voice, by the way. If you were here, that was a full blown character.
Thank you.
If you could see it performed.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
What was having now worked on stage, you know, off Broadway and the workshop during the summer, do you remember your first time on a movie set? And how it felt?
Yes. And it was, again, from Bunny Bunny, the producer, Jim Stern, made a little bitty indie movie. It was right when Sundance was first getting going, and it was called, I don't want to even say the name, because you can still find stuff out there. I'm terrible in it from what I've seen. It was a little indie movie that we shot in Illinois, and it was thrilling. I felt like, I don't know, it was happening. It's happening. Oh my gosh, it's happening. Even though we were, you know, paid very little and never got a release or any of that. I was scared. I guess I was also very nervous because I was a theater actor and you know, there's that size difference that you have to, you have to mind, because it's true. The process of acting is the same, but it's different. You can bring it way down. I've worked with actors, big actors, who I could not hear in a conversation with them on screen. You're having a conversation with them, and you just wait till their mouth stop moving because they're so subtle in there. And they're great actors that I admire. But while I was filming it going, I can't believe this.
Huh?
This is insane. I can't. I thought they were really all that, and now I'm. And then seeing it, it's like, oh, they are. They just have that ability to go small.
So it's true that some of those old rubrics that like the cameras eavesdropping, you know, that's true.
Yes. Yes. It's absolutely eavesdropping and amplifying, and and mining your work for what, you know, then you've got all the post-production that comes out and goes, oh, and I'll pull that out of it, and I'll pull that out of mm-hmm. it to help us with the narrative. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you have, definitely in film, you can get a lot smaller, and in television as well. And I'm starting to get there. I'm starting to figure out.
Oh, don't go too far. We love what you do.
Yeah.
Don't go changing.
It's I like testing the bounds of that one.
But that's the big thing. So my dad doesn't feel that it is. Some older films, much older, are cheesy because the actors had only done theater. Mm-hmm. And when you're playing to the back of the room,
right,
it's one thing. And then when there's a camera real close to your face, mm-hmm. it changes things. So for me, there's the miracle worker where they're going, Helen! And they're clapping in her face. I'll never forget. See, we watched it in school, and I thought it was the funniest thing I'd ever seen. And I'm someone raised on black and white and mm-hmm. and the classics and stuff like that. So I do not laugh easily at those things. I tend to go, well, you see, they were, but this is a different type. But even I thought it was hysterical because it was so ridiculously over the top.
Right.
And he goes, no, it's not. It's fine. It's like, it's a lot.
Well, I mean, I love the 1930s, my favorite decade.
Really?
Of movies. Yeah, I'm just hooked for life. And I love other films too, but I'm very much at home in the 1930s. And a lot of the actors, of course, it was the first full decade of talkies. So a lot of those actors were stage actors
right. who've
just been brought out to Hollywood.
Of course.
And so there was a declamatory style, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And some actors got it right away, like Spencer Tracy. He kind of got it
mm-hmm.
right away,
mm-hmm.
If not immediately, then very soon after his first couple of experiences. And he still seems natural.
Right.
Even naturalistic.
Right.
And then there are others who are, you know, bigger.
Is this the end of Rico? Yeah, there's some big ones.
I wouldn't want to see Edward G. Robinson small. I'm sorry.
I'll
fight you on that one.
I get it. I understand.
No. He's got to be who he is.
All right. I can't wait to see this fight.
Cannot imagine.
In the octagon.
So, here you are starting to do movies and with other more experienced film actors.
Yes, yes.
How are you gauging, like, you're with Sandra Bullock?
Well, you're in rehab with Sandra Bullock.
Right. Well, the next movie I did was Patch Adams, so as far as size goes.
Very subtle, quiet, and understated actor.
Yeah, I didn't get an education there, although it was wonderful to work with him for a few days.
We're talking about Robin Williams.
Yes, I'm sorry, Robin Williams, yes. Mm-hmm. Again, like, I think back to that film, I was just, you know, when you're young, you just have so much joy. That sounds awful. I remember that movie. I was hanging out with Michael Jeter,
mm-hmm.
and we were just talking about, we were just waiting, we were in an insane asylum. I played an insane person in it for just a very short amount of time, but it's a few days filming, and he was leaning by a window in the insane asylum, and I went over to him and was like, so what you doing? He's like, oh, you know, I'm just leaning here getting some rays. And I said, oh, you got to be careful about those rays because they'll plant moles in your neck. And then Robin came over, heard that we were doing, I guess, voices characters. Again, we're back there. And he's like, oh, yes. You got moles too. They dug up my whole insides, you know. And then it changed to a different voice, and changed to a different voice, and we started going just around and around, changing characters and playing keep up. And
what a joyous experience that must have been.
I was aware of it in the moment how mm-hmm. great it was. It was like I was standing beside myself, going, I can't believe this is happening, because I was doing characters that I think I had learned from him. Mm-hmm. From Robin, mm-hmm. and that he definitely was an inspiration. So that was that experience. But I was reading a David Sedaris book, Naked, I read a whole, like, 3-4 pages out loud to the cast. Like, I'm like, who was I back then? I would never do that now. It's like a little bitty role come on and go, everyone, listen to this great book I'm reading. I'm going to do the roles for you all. It was just, anyway, it was wonderful. And then I did Sandra, 28 Days, and she was lovely. Viggo Mortensen was on that movie. Mm-hmm. Steve Buscemi. It was all just, I really enjoyed that movie. The first movies you ever do, you remember so much about
it. Sure. Yeah.
Margot
sure.
Martindale was in that movie.
She's the best.
She's great.
The best.
Marion Jean-Baptiste. Dominic West.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was just a, yeah.
Well, whose technique did you take note of that that gave you a clue maybe to film acting as opposed to stage acting? Or none at all.
None at all.
We can skip to the next question if you want.
I guess I wish I had taken some. I don't know. I haven't. I truly am still learning. I think I'm getting there, though. I'd like to find this, you know, the more nuanced, subtler, how you can just do so little and say so much.
Well, you know what? There's lots of people who can do that, but a lot of people can't do what you do.
Right.
So,
and if you have a role that's smaller, you don't have the ability to sort of build a whole slow build into anything. You come on and...
Ta-da!
You're this wonderful person who... Hi! Like, why is that character in there? I do think about Viggo Mortensen. Viggo Mortensen was his process was so specific and very different from everybody else's on that film. Mm-hmm. He played a baseball player and he was spending a lot of time with a baseball team. He was just kind of embedded with a baseball team and
he's super method.
Yeah,
he's super method.
Betty Thomas was the director on that. Mm-hmm. I loved working with her, but she would just be like, stop, go back, do it again, like as you're in the scene. What was that? And do a different punchline. She let me just write different punchlines every time some dumb joke about it. I found an eyelash, everybody make a wish. And I say, I want to be sober. And they're like, you have to everybody wants that, something else. And it's like the first line was an ABBA box set. And I was like, I want something else. And she's like, okay, a cheese sandwich, but a good one with thick cheese, lots of mayonnaise, and on wheat bread. And I'm like, no, do another one, Alan. My foreskin back. Nobody asked me before they took it. They just took it. And that one ended up in the movie.
That's in the movie. Yeah, I remember it. Ended up in the
movie. But I remember Viggo, go back. What? Like, I don't even think he was responding to Viggo at that point. Like, you know, he was in character.
Rehabilitated baseball player. Yes.
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 It was like a lot of respect. And I love, he's one of my favorite actors.
He's a great actor.
Yeah.
To see like that next to, you know, with Sandra Bullock, who's just a lot of fun and just embraces it with a lot of joy and fun playing around. And I guess I just pick up a little from everybody along the way. I don't really have one person. When I was growing up, I liked watching Gene Wilder,
well,
who has a size to him, which is one of the things I love about him.
But he's real.
Yes.
That's what struck me. I mean, Jesse and we may have talked about this before on the show, and forgive me if we're repeating ourselves. But the thing is, we've seen several productions of The Producers on stage.
Yes.
With very good actors. Mm-hmm. But when they go bonkers as the part of Leo Bloom, requires them to, they're being funny.
Right.
And when Gene Wilder goes bonkers in the original movie of The Producers, he's really doing it.
Yep.
You just believe him that he is that guy.
Yeah.
And that's a crucial difference.
I'm wet. Yeah. I'm wet and I'm cold. Yeah.
It's like you have to go as high as you go as deep. Like you have to go both directions.
That's what he does.
Yeah.
He did, you know, and God bless him. Yeah.
Yeah, he is he's one of those frequency actors. Like he's on a frequency that when he's talking, at any moment, he can begin to scream, but then he's also right there. You know, cagey. You don't know where he's going.
Yeah.
Alan Arkin has the same kind of thing. You don't know when he's going to start screaming. He's just a different frequency. Yeah. I love that.
It's fantastic. Did you consider a moment, a turning point for you? Was there one film that you thought, oh, well, now I've kind of made it to the next level here?
Wow. He likes to get deep.
In terms of feedback that you got,
right,
or response,
right,
or just how you felt.
I'm sure there is. I really liked coming on your show. That was really important when I came on your show about Death at a Funeral. Mm-hmm. That one was one I really liked. I really like how it turned out.
And it was a great showcase for you.
Yes, and it was another unfortunate. It was like one of those that it just didn't get released here. It was released here for a week, and then whoever it was that lied and said we're going to actually promote it didn't. But I'm very big in certain parts of German-speaking Scandinavia. There's a place where I'm famous. It's a small area.
It's actually called Tudiktown.
Tudiktown,
yes. It's a wonderful spot. I recommend it highly to everyone for vacations.
Yes.
Everybody talks a little funny, but you get into it.
Yeah, lots of characters.
Lots of characters.
Lots of characters out there.
But it was a great part.
Yes.
And a very funny movie. And you worked for Frank Oz.
And I worked for Frank Oz, who's...
I directed the film.
I can still pick up the phone and give him a call. He doesn't return, but he hasn't changed the number, and that's rare.
It's good.
Yeah. Yeah, that was big. I don't know. I'm just like, I just kind of...
Because that's the first one that I think of.
Right.
Jesse asked me, and I said, that's the one that pops into my head as the first time I was really conscious of you, even though I had obviously seen you in some of those other movies. But maybe, I don't know, what was it? Seeing you naked? Is that what did it?
Because naked on a roof.
Naked
on a roof.
It's
maybe yes, maybe no.
Is a tricky role because it's... The guy, if you haven't seen it, he gets high. And if you have, you may have seen it, but you're saying Alan wasn't in that movie. They remade it a year later.
With an all-black cast.
With almost predominantly black cast, with Chris Rock and like major actors. Danny Glover was in it and Martin Lawrence. But it did not, in my opinion... translate well to an American setting because it's a farce and manners are a big part of it. So if, you know, it takes place at a funeral and there's all these improprieties happening and things are going wrong. And if people can't, you know, if people get upset over the smallest little impolite, uncomfortable thing, then it makes it funnier. Mm-hmm. In the American one, we don't have all these, you can cross so many lines. It's just when does it become funny? So the English version was the one. But it was a difficult role because I'm high from fairly early in the film, and then it's about keeping being high funny throughout. So you're not just playing the same note again and again and again. And that's what Frank and I worked on. Another great voice character guy.
Yeah, right.
He's done a few things.
Yeah. Where, you know, we did trajectory of the high going through the film. Mm-hmm. And then I do end up naked and then on the roof. And then he was very upset. Someone who's very upset, very big, but very seriously upset when he was naked on the roof.
And British.
And British. Yes, I was British. Another accent. Yeah. That one was big. I don't know. I feel like in my career, like my career was... the things that I've done get found out a little bit later. I haven't had that thing where a thing happens and everybody's like, have you seen the thing that's happening right now and it's so important right now?
Well, there is one sort of example of that.
Okay.
And that is Firefly.
Which
we're going to talk
delayed
about.
Delayed reaction.
We'll talk about the aftermath. Yes. Firefly, Joss Whedon's series, which lasted just one season.
Not even.
But did develop a following.
More than a following.
Yes.
A cult.
Yes.
The word's overused, I think.
Oh, I think for this one it applies, though.
But it does apply. And then you got to do, subsequently, a feature film.
Yes.
Based on, this was supposed to resolve the series, right?
Yes.
And that was called Serenity.
Mm-hmm.
And then that just sort of pumped up that fan base.
Right.
To the point where you wound up creating
a
web series.
Yeah, Con Man.
to talk about that, for those who don't know about it, explain how all that came about.
So Con Man is definitely a delayed, I don't know, fame. And that's great. I mean, it grows every year. I go to a lot of conventions.
Sure.
And that's part of the story, I guess, is that I didn't know sci-fi so well. I knew some, But I was invited to a science fiction convention a year after Firefly was canceled. I think before the movie was out, and I went. It was the first one I'd ever been to. I've been to so many now. And they've changed so much over the years.
Yeah.
It really has changed. Yeah. It's become much more mainstream. But I met people in that process that hated their lives. It was really sad when you meet them, people who were, you know, sci-fi actors who were stuck in the sci-fi genre, and they felt that they were being disrespected by their fame. Like that the fans were coming out to meet them, but they didn't appreciate it. And everybody would say this when you were doing these cons. People go, ah, somebody's going to write a story about this. Somebody's going to write a story about this. So I made a series, that little 10-minute, 15-minute episode series that we crowdfunded from the fans, Nathan Fillion and myself, and our producer friend PJ Harsma, about the con world, called Con Man, about a guy who goes to conventions who doesn't appreciate his life. And it really echoes my experience with Firefly, in that it was a short run TV show that was canceled. But then it veers pretty quickly, because I've been lucky enough to get other work. I'm not, and I'm not bitter like the character that I played, Ray. My best friend was played by Nathan Fillion, which Nathan and I are very close friends, but he was like Matt Damon famous in the series. And I want my life to be so much like his, and it just isn't. But I'm surrounded by all the people of that world. Mindy Sterling played my Booker, who was a former sci-fi actress herself, and she's a terrible person. There are some former sci-fi people who are actual managers that are lovely people. I think I've upset some. But yeah, so I showed that world. It was a lot of fun. We crowdfunded, got $3.2 million from the fans. We made comic books. We wrote, wow. We made a game. There was a game, Con Man the Game, where you built your own con. Huh. That was great. And then we made Lionsgate had us do a season two for their streaming service that was unfortunately short-lived, so we did two seasons. And was nominated for an Emmy. So was Mindy Sterling. So that was cool. I didn't win, but I didn't lose. The Emmys lost, really. I feel like.
That's beautiful.
Well put.
That's really, I feel well like that's who lost that.
Is
night.
It still available to be seen?
I think you can see it on, I think you can probably get it on Apple movie type things, purchases. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that whole, I mean, it changed my life. Firefly changed my life. Firefly mm-hmm. changed my life totally. But then I also did, I do a lot of sci-fi now. Like I did Firefly, and because once you do, like you know in this business, once you do a thing, people, when they're casting something similar to it, they're like, oh, get me somebody from that world.
Right.
So I'm very castable in the sci-fi world, and have been again and again since Firefly. But I did iRobot. Nobody even realized I was the robot, because Firefly still wasn't big for a couple years until after Serenity came out. Because Serenity didn't do a whole lot of great big business. Mm-hmm. It wasn't for like another 2 years that people were like, oh, wait a second, what's this thing?
But that's what's so crazy about all of it. In the same way, I'm amazed that people are still obsessed with Buffy the way that they are. I watched Buffy. I loved it. You know, it was great.
Uh-huh.
And it's been gone for a long time. And I enjoyed it very much. And I thank you all for letting me watch Buffy. And the people are diehard.
It's like it's a beautiful corpse, you know? It died too young.
Yeah.
Really died too young, and it's just a shame, and it has that carries that with it. And it makes it that, this sweet sadness.
I think we look back at things that are well written and well acted and go, oh, maybe we should have kept that. That's what I feel like happens over and over and over again, is we keep going, oh, that thing that was intelligent. Yeah, maybe we ought to bring that thing back.
Yeah, I wish we could bring Firefly back.
Hey, everything else.
Well, we're too old to do a prequel, and we could do a post, but I'm, spoiler alert, dead. And so I don't want that to happen. I'm going to scuttle I would love for that to happen. Well, I actually think it could return in about another decade. If you just, as long as you have Nathan Fillion as the captain, he could put together another... crew.
But it's sci-fi. You can come back.
Yeah, not in that world, though. Yeah. It's kind of... It would.
So, what's with the negativity, Jess?
I was being positive. You could come back.
It does seem,
you could be a hologram. You could be like Tupac. You could be a hologram in the show.
Joss Whedon said that he wouldn't want to...
Make a hologram of Tupac.
Well... He has one of those, so he's kind of bored
That's
with
fair.
It.
I get it.
But it's just around the house.
just making breakfast in the morning.
He makes it breakfast. It's weird. It's an odd relationship. But he doesn't want to ruin something that, you know, it's it's kind of it's gotten this.
Well, that's very British as well. That's the other, you know, a lot of British series don't run that long. And it's a nice thing because it means that they stay good.
Right. He's there right now making a new show for HBO. So we'll get a new Joss Whedon show on HBO, which... Oh. Joss Whedon on HBO, what's that going to be like?
Yeah, right? Yeah. Fancy.
Yeah.
Now, just continuing on movies for the moment, in which you actually appear on screen.
Right, okay.
As opposed to those in which you don't appear visibly.
Right. There's a few.
You got to make a Western.
Oh, yeah.
310 to Yuma.
Remake
there of 310. There aren't too many actors in today's world who can say, yeah, I made a Western.
Yeah, I know. That was pretty great.
Yeah.
I played the appropriate role for me. You got all these guys. We're going after Russell Crowe. We're gonna go catch him. It's like, let's take a shortcut through here. Yeah, let's do it. And I'm the one character who goes, this is Apache country. Guys, my powder isn't dry. Like, I'm that guy. I think my horse has worms. It was,
you're the Jew of the Western.
I don't know.
I can say that because we're Jewish, okay. And I know how we would be.
Although the great thing about that, if you are the sensible one in a Western and it's set in the winter, which ours was, you get the best coat. Everybody else who's cool wears very little clothing. And I had a scarf
you
and
were
thick
toasty.
Gloves and a hat. And Russell Crowe's like, why does he get that? Because he's the doc. He's smarter than your character. You have rage to keep you warm. So it was great. It was wonderful. Yeah. Christian Bale, Russell Crowe, Ben Foster. We hung out, and Dallas Roberts, another really good actor who's in that movie. We hung out during the shooting of it in Santa Fe, and I didn't have any scenes with Ben, really. Just one where he ran through town going, y'all gonna die, and that was about it. And then I saw the movie and could not believe it. I was like, you were doing that? While we were I had no...
Apache country.
I was over there. missing. I thought I heard something. turned out it's just a rabbit. That he just delivered such an incredible performance. And to do that with such seasoned, strong actors and to shine the way he did in his role was impressive. He's one of my...
He's a great actor.
He's incredible. He's incredible. He's one of those people that I can't see the seams. I don't see how he puts it together.
Yeah.
I'm just like watching like, oh, you're it. You're
very,
just that. You're just
organic.
That. Yeah. He was very serious. He was very serious. There was a lot to complain about on that movie. All movies, you can complain about a lot of stuff. But it was the winter time. It was snowing, and it was like supposed to be precipitation free. it's kind of. It wouldn't get up above 0 degrees, and we were fighting the sunlight because it was always outside, and he just stayed focused. He never complained. I was always impressed with that guy.
Did you see Leave No Trace?
I did not.
See that movie.
It's a great movie,
fantastic.
And he's great in it.
Oh, good.
Last year or year before? I can't keep track of anything.
2 years ago.
Okay. Leave No Trace. Something Deborah Granick. Amazing movie.
Okay.
He's amazing in it.
Yeah, good, he's... He's good.
Yeah.
Now, you have, though, built another entire career.
Right.
Doing voices.
Oh, yes. Characters we've discussed.
Yes, doing characters.
But you would only know me by my voice, certainly.
Yeah. And
but at this point, we always know it's you. When in doubt, we'll be sitting in a theater and some voice, it has to be Alan Tudyk. It has to be. Much like whenever you see a skeletal, it's Doug Jones.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Was watching the new What We Do in the Shadows. The character comes out, I go, it has to be Doug Jones. Who else could it be? So I'm sitting in Frozen. I go, that's Alan Tudyk. I know that's Alan Tudyk. I know it is. I can hear him. I know it is. We're watching Wreck-It Ralph. Same thing. It has to be Alan Tudyk. There's nobody
in
else
in the two be doing. In the new one or the first?
No.
The first one. The first one.
Well, the first one. You're doing Edwin.
Edwin.
You're doing Edwin from the Disney Alice in Wonderland.
The joy in his face when he says that.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Oh yes, you gave me great joy.
Oh good. They asked. That was how I was introduced to Disney and Disney Animation. Was there was evidently somebody who was supposed to do the read through who fell out right at the last minute, and the read throughs are, at that time, this one was anyway, in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And my agent called and said, can you do Edwin? Please say yes, because I've told them you can. And I was like, I think I can. I love Edwin. Huge fan of vaudeville. Huge fan of that whole era. I used to go to the Museum of Radio and Television before the internet existed, to just watch old show of shows and watch his show. But I flew up there, and like on Southwest Airlines, you'd think they'd send a plane. I mean, not for me, but for Sarah Silverman, right. For Jane Lynch, for Christ's sakes. And, you know, we got the exit row, so it was okay. But she's got long legs.
She's a tall lady.
Jack McBrayer, he's a national treasure, for Christ's sake.
And he's petite. You got to be careful.
I know. Protect the man. Right. But we all flew up there for the day, and then I met John Lasseter, and John was like, I'm really glad to meet you. And Jennifer Lee worked on that, who was then doing Frozen, and so she put me in Frozen. And it's after that, I really campaigned hard to convince them, you have to put me in the rest of them now.
Well, yeah.
Because those two wouldn't have done as well I hadn't have been the thing.
Weaselton.
Yeah.
I guess we should just stop for a moment for anyone who... listening, who doesn't know who Edwin is, we should just take a little...
We can't be friends if you don't
grace
know.
...note here to explain Edwin. That he was a huge star who started in the Ziegfeld Follies in the early part of the 20th century, became a vaudeville and Broadway star, one of the first big stars in radio.
Yes.
And then one of the first stars to appear on live television.
Yes.
Doing his own TV
show. For one whole season, only one season only, because... he ran out of material. He did all of his material from his lifetime of doing stage shows, and then they were like, "We're done." maybe we should start a thing called writers' rooms. And they're like, "Oh, right. Glad you came up with that now." But he did Disney movies.
And he is, of course, the voice of the Mad Hatter in the original animated Alice in Wonderland, produced by Walt Disney. And he then became a house favorite of Walt Disney's.
Mm-hmm.
And
I love to laugh.
He's Uncle Albert in Mary Poppins, and he's in lots and lots of other Disney films. Anyway, a wonderful comedian who then became a very good actor as well.
Yes.
But you are keeping spirit alive, just his voice, but his spirit.
Yes. Well, thank you. It's my favorite character I've had the opportunity to play for them, because he can make sounds that they would just animate. And then you'd watch the animation and he'd jiggle around and cough and stumble into something.
So they video record you doing your voice sessions, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that they can get some idea of your expressions.
Yes. Yeah, then they'll send... it's an interesting dance that you do back and forth on those. First you record, and then they animate it, and then sometimes they'll come up with something that you then add voice to. You know, they'll have some physical bit that they need you to voice. But you can make sounds that they then make into something that's actually happening in the room that you didn't mean... that wasn't the intention in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Like the microphone is slipping out of my hand, I think at one point. You know, I hadn't thought that's what's happening, but that's what they filled it with, and so it's a fun process.
My mom said the other day, she said that you're our Mel Blanc, and I never thought about it that way. But
that's very kind.
It is true, though.
That is not. But that's very nice of her to say. Mel Blanc is a whole nother level. My God.
My God. Another, he was, I remember him from Jack Benny, the Jack Benny shows. Sure. He would come on and do, of course, from all the Warner Brothers cartoons, he was the best.
We bring Jack Benny up as often as humanly possible here because he's our favorite.
Do. Yes, we do.
And
really?
I think the first time I ever hyperventilated was trying to do the car. Little, I must have been like 7, and I'm trying to do the car, and I'm just like, you know, whoopsie daisy. But oh no,
he's just the thing, isn't he? He could do so much with talk about like that range. You know, you think about he started in the radio, but you know, he wasn't too big at all. That was where he played, right in that. He could tell a whole story without even blinking, just looking at you.
Yeah.
Well, nothing moving you could discern.
Yeah.
How does a car make you laugh? That's the thing.
It was Mel Blanc doing
that. But that's what I'm saying. Yep. Is like that. That's incredible.
Right.
It's funny. As a kid, I thought it was one of the funniest things I'd ever heard. The sound of him doing
that. They had a real stutterer as the original voice of Porky Pig. Not funny at all.
Do not mock that poor man who talks like Porky Pig in real life.
And then when they lucked into discovering this young radio actor named Mel Blanc, he made it funny.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And he made everything funny. Yeah. He made everything real and he made everything wonderful. And yeah, so there we are.
Yeah, he's amazing.
But you are in...
You're up there, man.
I've had a chance to make some different voices, which is fantastic and really lucky. It's a really lucky thing. As I said, I meet a lot of actors who are like, how do you get into voice? Or young people who... Like, yeah, it is hard. Because I got a job after Bunny Bunny doing Ice Age, a new movie called Ice Age that they didn't know what it was going to be. And I played 3 different roles. They just handed me a stack of pictures. And they're like, how would these dinosaurs talk? What would their voices be? And I just wrote off a few lines that were attached to each picture. And then they called me back and said, yeah, you got 3 of them. And I'm the Dodos. Beware the Ice Age. I was me and the last melon. And then there was, I haven't seen him in a long time, but I don't think I have the voices doing them right. But
everyone
I did
is
that.
Judging you.
Yeah, I did that. And then I didn't do another voiceover job until Ice Age 2.
Ice Age was made on the East Coast.
Right.
Blue Sky Studios. Right. So that was before you were a Hollywood guy.
Yeah, I'm a Hollywood guy now. I've been in Hollywood for a while now. I came over here to do a little show called Firefly, and I still had an apartment in New York, and I'll be right back.
Yeah,
They forgot to go back 30-some years ago. My parents. Same.
But you did get to go back and do Spam-A-Lot on Broadway for like 6 months. Now, how did that come about?
Oh, it's just another great... Are your bags packed? One of those jobs. I got a call. Hank Azaria was doing a show called Huff on Showtime. And I don't know that he was anticipating a second season. It was one of those shows that its future wasn't certain. Anyway, right after they won the Tony, he had to leave. They came up in New York. They tested in Chicago, brought it to New York. It was a hit. The Tonys happened on a Monday, or on a Sunday night, and then Monday he left town, and it won Best Musical, all of that. And so I had been rehearsing the week before that. I just got a call to come in. I auditioned for Mike Nichols and Eric Idle because everybody was in town because they were getting ready for it hadn't opened that long ago, and they were getting ready for the Tonys coming up, and. Casey Nicholaw, who was just nominated for a Tony, also for Prom. It was crazy. And I got to play. And I honestly, this is how out of it I was. I got the audition. I was like, great. There were 3 scenes. And I learned them. And then I went to see the show the night before my audition the next day. Mm-hmm. I went to go see the show and realized I had learned the wrong side of the scenes. Because I had no idea they wanted me to play Lancelot. I thought they wanted me to play the role playing opposite Lancelot.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the role playing opposite the knight who says knee, because I didn't think they wanted me to play the big role. And so I went home and called my friend. I'm like, you've got to come over here right away and help me work on this audition, because I planned the wrong roles. And I got to play Lancelot, the French taunter, a knight who says knee, Tim the enchanter. I guess that's it. I feel like I'm missing one.
That's it.
Yeah.
One of everything.
And it was on Broadway, and it was right. So they won, you know, they won the Tony, Best Director, Best Musical, and Sada Ramirez won for Best Actress in a Musical, who was phenomenal. I'll still watch that on. You can see it on YouTube.
Yeah.
The Diva's Lament. It'll bring a tear to your eye.
Song and
I would cry backstage. I was before I would come on, and I would always have that time backstage to watch her or watch the monitor. The scrim was closed. But anyway.
So what is that like to join a show? To join a going concern, you know. Now they had, as you said, they hadn't been running all that long.
Not in New York, no.
I saw you.
You did?
I did.
Hey.
I did.
Lucky her. We didn't get to go back on that trip, so my wife and I. So we missed that opportunity.
You've seen enough.
But you got to work with Mike Nichols.
I know.
And you passed muster with Eric Idle.
No, I
know.
No, just
again,
Eric Idle.
I can call him on the phone.
He won't answer, right? That's the... No, him...
Not when he sees my number, answers. But I can call him. And he has not changed it, so one day he might answer. Yeah, it was incredible. And the cast was amazing. They were very generous. I was the first person to replace anybody. It had only been them from the beginning. And so it was a big deal for somebody just to step in and for them to just trust. And Mike Nichols was not the type of... Some musicals, you had mentioned producers earlier. Mm-hmm. I had talked to somebody who took over for Nathan Lane at one point. And at that time on Broadway... He was being asked to follow Nathan's blocking and everything to the letter. Like,
really
he puts
hard.
His hand on the table here. He does this.
Oh,
like,
dear.
And that's really hard to imbue with any type of life. Whereas Mike was like, come up and do your own thing. His whole thing was kill your babies. You have to kill your babies. If you did something on stage that got a laugh every time and you've just been doing it, which could be that when you say the line, oh, I see. But when you say it on stage, you go, oh, I see. And you know it's always going to get a laugh. He'd say, kill it. Kill that baby. I'm tired of it. You're getting tired of it, and you don't even know it. Try to find a different way to get a laugh or do something else. And so then you would just, which for me was one of the hardest things I've ever done.
Wow.
To know, to go on stage in front of an audience who's paid money to come see, to laugh, and is ready to laugh, and you know the thing that you can do that will make them laugh, and to choose not to do it was one of the hardest. I honestly, the first time I did it, I walked off stage and wept. I'm not overly dramatic, but I did. It was really that hard. It was so hard.
I can only imagine.
But then what the brilliance of that is it does not get stale, and especially in a show like that, because it's a lot of, some of it is sketch-like, you know, and there is a narrative that goes through, but you're meeting this very crazy character and this very crazy character, that it can become stale fast. You're just trying to maintain laughs, that if you, you know, find a new way through. And the other actors were fun playing around. I did 200 performances of it, and standing ovations every night on the backs of them, backs of their work that they're in the winter of Chicago. And I just stepped in like as the wave is cresting, get on. And it was at Schubert Theater.
It's a great theater as well. It's a great place to see anything. And
It was really fun. You know, Tim Curry.
No big deal.
No big deal. Tim Curry and with Sada. I don't think Sada's gone back to Broadway
No, it's been a while.
And she is, her and I actually went to Juilliard together. Hmm. Bizarrely. We were in the same, not at the same time, we were in the same class. She was 17 when she started.
Wow.
Just a youngin'. That's as young as you can be to come into that school. And she was a good actress, but when we got to singing class, it was like, oh, I see. That's what you can do. And she's been on Grey's Anatomy. If you don't know her, she's on Grey's Anatomy. It's spelled Sara, but pronounced Sada. And now she's on another show that I have not seen. But she's big in the LGBT community, and she's you see her a lot around events. She's one of the funniest people. And I don't, it's rare to have somebody that has such amazing comedy chops just not do comedy. That'll make me weep in the wings.
Yeah. Yeah.
Weeping
yeah.
in the wings. Yeah. That's the name of my autobiography I've yet to write. Laughter through the tears.
Chapter one, kill your babies. Why?
It's so interesting you should say that because, of course, when Mike Nichols broke into our consciousness with Elaine May,
mm-hmm.
They'd come out of improv, Second City, and the Compass Players in Chicago, and the conflict they had apparently as with each other was that one of them, once they set one of their brilliant routines, and the other one didn't want to set the routine.
Wow.
And I
was
think,
that Mike?
Well, that's what I'm trying to remember. I think he was the one who wanted to keep it as
oh, wow.
as they had done it, and she was the one who wanted to, you know, still fool around. And I hope I'm getting that right.
If that was where he was, he definitely over the years changed and grew, because that's something, and I've worked with other directors who are like, you need to cut a laugh, even if you lose a laugh for just 3-4 performances for them is just as excruciating, and they wouldn't allow you to do it. Like, what mm-hmm. are you doing? This is a comedy. You get the laugh.
Yeah.
But he was about being honest and true. I remember he saw me do a performance one time. It was at the ninth performance of the week. It was for Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. It was a mm-hmm. A charity performance, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I was done. It was a very hard very hard show. And I pushed. I was pushing for my laughs, and it's never funny. And he came to my dressing room afterwards and said, "Alan, I think I can say this. We can cuss, right?
Oh yeah.
This is kind of wrong." But this was Mike Nichols. "Alan, don't try to make a hooker come. That's not your job. Your job is to fuck her, okay? If she comes, that's her business. All right." Isn't that and that is actually how he sounded at that time in his life. That I don't know if I could do his voice on the PA system and fool the rest of the cast.
Oh my God.
It was really fun because sometimes he would be there and he'd, you know, like the half hour, Mike wants to say a few words. "Hello, everybody. I'm in the house tonight. Let's make sure that, you know, we keep the pace up because I've got some notes and we're going to meet on stage afterwards with some notes. All right." And I gave a good sign off for, "This is Alan Tudyk's last performance tonight. And people have been calling and asking me again and again, will the show be as funny? No. No, it won't. We're going to have to go back to what it was, and we'll have to be okay with that." The whole thing. We had a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, Eric was there. Eric was there that night. This is crazy, because he just wrote about this. He just tweeted about this. Eric was the night that Tim Curry and Sada Ramirez both left the show at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I came back and did a Mike Nichols goodbye to these two cast members and did this whole thing about how they're going on a tour as a competitive dancing team called Curry and the Beans. And I just went on and on and on. And Eric came up to me afterwards and he's like, "Alan, that was really, really funny." And I said, "Thanks." And he goes, no, "that was really, really funny." And I said, "Thank you." He said, "You had Tim slid down the wall and was crying. He was laughing so hard." And I said, "Thanks." And he looked at me like I wasn't hearing him.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, "No, like, that was really funny." And I heard him, and it helped give me the courage to write later. Like those, you know, when Eric Idle says, "Listen to me when I'm saying to you, you wrote something that made people laugh. Don't discredit it." Anyway.
Yeah, no, well, that's a big deal.
It was that was a big thing in life. That was a big thing. Broadway,
it should be.
Musical, good times. And I'm doing a play again. I haven't done I did a play after that. I did Prelude to a Kiss. Mm-hmm. Oh, then I worked with Eric Idle again. We did, that was the only other play I've done in L.A., was An Evening Without Monty Python, which sounds like a terrible idea, I think. But it was really funny, because it's us doing Monty Python sketches. It was a bunch of actors doing Monty Python sketches that Eric directed, and he wrote some interstitial stuff, and we did musical numbers, and it was kind of like a review piece. And we did it at the Ricardo Montalban, the Montalban Theater. And then we also did it in New York. And now it's been like seven, 8 years. And now I'm doing this thing, Mysterious Circumstances. More accents. There's Sherlock Holmes, who are very upper class accents, of course. And then also Richard Lansdowne Green, who was a real person who died. He was a Sherlock Holmes historian and scholar, and Arthur Conan Doyle scholar. And he was killed in 2004, and his murder was never solved. So this play is about that.
Oh, my. And where will people be able to see this, and when?
At the Geffen. Wednesday the 12th is our first preview.
Hey, exciting. Mm-hmm.
So that's soon, and then it goes through July. Oh, we wrap it up July 14th. Anyway, sometime. It's really, it is an incredible, it's a very funny play, but it's also serious.
When this episode goes out, it will have started.
It'll have already started.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I play two characters. So mm-hmm. I still don't just play one.
You.
I play two.
Why play one when you can play two?
You can That's play right. two, exactly.
Yeah.
And
who is with you in this venture?
Many theatrical actors.
Personages
who I didn't know any of the cast members going into this that are in this play and have really enjoyed working with every one of them. Do you know Hugo Armstrong? Mm-hmm. This man is very funny and brilliant. And Austin Durant and Leo Marx and Ramiz Monsef. He plays among the other roles. Everybody plays multiple roles, but he mm-hmm. plays Watson and Helen Sadler.
Yeah.
And that's us. Like, we all got together last night after we've been teching. So we just finished tech last night. And we all got together to say, wow, we did it. We just finished tech. We teched through the show, and we're looking at each other like, where is everybody? Realizing it's really just us? Wow. Because everybody's changing constantly, coming on as different people, and mm-hmm. people play three and four roles a piece, and I get to play two. And it's serious because a man does die, but it's also fantastical, and it has farcical elements to it, that some physical comedy elements to it, which are great. It's a lot of joy.
And say the title again?
Mysterious Circumstances.
Mysterious Circumstances at the Geffen.
At the Geffen Playhouse yeah. in Westwood.
Yeah. Into July.
Which is a wonderful theater.
Yeah.
It really is. It's
because it's intimate.
It's intimate, yes. It's like 500 seats, but it's roomy, which yeah. you don't usually say about theater.
No.
It's so roomy.
It's because all of our
My
stuff
knees
is
got
new.
Lonely.
That's what
They had so much room on their own. Yeah, it's because it's L.A.
R-O-O-M-I, R-O-M-Y, as opposed to R-H-E-U-M-Y.
Yes.
So these seats are very roomy.
I like
very
it.
Very roomy.
Yeah, I like it.
Which a lot of phlegm.
A lot of phlegm, yes, and right. when it rains, it's a whole next level to it. Yeah, it's a great theater. It's fun. It's a big tech show. There's a lot of stuff that happens and a lot of scene changes. A lot of
right. don't tell us more. Don't
there's
tell
magic
us more.
In it.
Okay,
but it's not a magic show. But yeah, there's a lot okay. of elements.
I'd love if we walk in the lobby, you're just doing like the pulling the coins from people's ears. Hello.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. Method again.
Yeah. Is
get
this
into
your
it.
Card? Well, how about this one?
No.
How about this one?
Alan, thanks so much for coming.
Yeah.
And having. Fun with us because we've
yeah,
had
thank
fun
you.
With you.
Thank you.
This is really cool. Are you a social media person?
I am. I do. I do. I'm on Twitter.
He's on the Twitters and the Instagrams.
I do Instagram. I don't do Instagram enough. Yes.
Do any
we were just
one
saying
of us
that.
Do
you don't do
enough?
Instagram
right.
enough.
Yeah, I'm
we
sure.
We were just making yeah. that remark.
Yeah. Yeah, I need to. I am social media. I don't do Facebook because I think they're the devil, but they're all versions of the devil. But Facebook's the obvious one.
Okay.
Just putting that out there, everybody.
Well, all right.
Get off Facebook. Okay. All right.
And Jesse, where do people find us? First off, they can find our merch. Where can they find our merch?
TeePublic. Malton on Movies, TEE Public, and you can wear our faces. Yes. Because all you ever wanted in your life was to wear our faces.
All
we
right.
We also have not our faces as options.
Fine.
But no, as for the socials, you are at Leonard Maltin and I am at Jesse Maltin on Twitter and Instagram. And you can always go to leonardmaltin.com for movie reviews and book roundups and all kinds of good stuff.
When confronted by a grizzly bear, why flat on the ground and pray dead? Above all, remain absolutely motionless. We'll see you next week, folks.
Nice.
Malton on Movies is sponsored today by Legion M, the first fan-owned entertainment company. They've got a lot of good stuff going on, and you can learn about it at legionm.com.